Struggling to find the part you needed yesterday? With a massive range of 1 million in-stock SKUs available, QuoteBeam just made your part search a whole lot easier. Faster checkout, tailored suggestions, and top-notch customer service. QuoteBeam's got it all. Visit QuoteBeam.com to learn why thousands of professionals like you are using QuoteBeam to simplify their parts procurement process. All right, welcome back to Automation Ladies. Today's guest, we have Ann Wyatt with us, a good friend and colleague who you may know around from LinkedIn or any of our events. She's been speaking at conferences and all that good stuff. Ann Wyatt from Ann Wyatt Recruiting, as well as being one of the co-founders of the Industry 4.0 Club. Welcome, Ann. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Nikki. It's good to be here. I love you guys.
It's been a long time coming to have you on the show.
So, it has been, and I need to return the favor one of these days.
I think our first message about us coming on Workforce 4.0 was before you started it, if I remember correctly.
But oh, I'm sure.
It'll happen one of these days. And we have Ellie with us today as well. I mean, I just want to say thank you, Anne, and thank you, Allie, for managing to pencil ourselves, all three of us, in on a Monday, because we've been traveling so much lately. And I know you guys spent some time together last week, but it's harder than we expect when we get together in person to also do this. And in fact, I'll say myself, I find it a little awkward when I'm in person. I'm like, where should I look? Where's the mic? I'm so used to doing this via Zoom or StreamYard in this case. So happy to see your faces here.
Yeah, well, you know, so I went out to Seattle last week to visit Allie in person because she's awesome. And I'd always wanted to go to Seattle. And Wednesday, we had to do a customer call. And then Thursday, we were doing an event. So, and then I left Friday morning early. So, Thursday.
And I drank too much caffeine.
I made it. Yay. But Thursday night, I've always wanted to go to Seattle. I really love Nirvana. I was telling Allie this. And then the real world, Seattle, y'all just don't even know. And I was like, can we go downtown? And Allie's like, okay, I guess. But she did. She showed me around downtown. It was really cool. We saw the Space Needle and we saw the aquarium and all the piers. That's really cool. And Pike's Place. And we ate at this really awesome Irish pub. So Allie was an amazing hostess.
You should tell her the story about the Space Needle.
The Space Needle?
Tell me the story about the Space Needle. I've actually never been up there. I lived in the area for a while. I've been down at the base and then I saw how much it costs and I was like, oh, never mind.
That's wild. I've been up there maybe 5 times just because every time I, you know, bring someone or someone comes, they want to go up there a lot of the times. And if it's on a clear day, like it's worth going up there because the view is going to be like legit. But if it's not, see, that's how you should decide whether or not you're going up there. Is it a clear day or not? If it's not, there really isn't a reason to go look at everything through the clouds, you know, but yeah, we have a fun story. It's very short.
Well, it was night. So when we went, it was night, but it was beautiful. But we went up there and we're like rolling. There's a little roundabout there, right? At the entrance. So we're like rolling in Allie's car, you know, I was driving, whatever. And she looks over at me and she's like, all right, so here's the Space Needle. And why don't you jump out and get a selfie and I'll park here. just jump out real quick and take the selfie and then we can go, you know, on to Pike's Place or whatever. So I'm like, you don't want to be in the selfie with me? And she's like, yeah, dude, I want to be in the selfie with you, but see, we're not allowed to be here and park here. So I want you to jump out and take a selfie with the Space Needle
to get this shit done. Like,
and I'm going to stay here in the event we get towed. And I was like, okay.
They're about to yell at me, so just hurry up and do it.
So I did it.
In the true fashion. But eventually I did park and take her around, so we did get to actually go places. But yeah, oh, that little roundabout, like, we're not really allowed to be there.
Not on a roundabout, no. Generally not.
But the bubblegum wall, I thought was very interesting.
Oh, that's like
very interesting.
The grossest thing, one of the grossest things I can imagine. So,
we survived.
A little bit different because we've got friends on. Normally, we start with the whole, and we'll get there to the, you know, tell us about how you got here question.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sorry. We get sidetracked.
This one will also have the, by the way, if you can't tell already, this will be an explicit episode. So the E is on, and junior board of directors, these are adult words if you're listening.
Yes. Do not repeat these words.
I actually really wanted to move to Seattle after college, and I almost made it there. I made it as far as Northern California, but I visited Seattle, and one of the first things I saw there was the gum wall. Ugh, grosses me out. I have a kind of a phobia of it's wet paper. Okay, so now I'm like giving everybody the opportunity to troll me every time you meet me. All you have to do is throw a wet napkin at Nikki and like I'll retreat into a shell.
Won't let that happen to you, Nikki.
That is gross though.
Yeah,
that's gross,
right? Like when paper disintegrates in the inappropriate context, especially around food, because generally at restaurants they'll put, you know, like a glass that's got condensation on the outside onto a napkin, and then it just keeps getting wetter, and then you pick up your glass and the napkin kind of like
I don't like that either.
It really grosses me out to a point where like if you try putting that stuff close to me, I've gotten better about it over the years, but when I was younger it was a real thing, and my boyfriend thought it was really funny, and so he would do it on purpose sometimes in front of me, my boyfriend now being my husband, not to do this to me anymore. But the gum thing really gives me that same feeling. It's like somebody else's gum that has been chewed and it shouldn't be in front of me. And so that whole gum wall just gives me the creeps. I mean, I saw it for the sake of seeing it, but don't ever bring me to that alley again. Thank you.
I was like, oh, yeah, look at that. And I was like, oh, yeah, we gotta take a picture. I'm like, really? We do? Do we? And then we were like, we got 10 feet, you know, in the middle of that alley.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that was good.
Yeah.
We were comfortable with being in the middle.
Yeah, that level of distance. And did you guys have fish and chips at the pub or chowder or what?
What do we have? We had this cheese thing. Allie had a salad.
Oh, we had brie. We went to an Irish pub in the middle of like, you know, not post alley, but the thing next to post alley. So the hidden post alley. I don't know. We were just walking to see what was open. And we're like, let us in. Because we wanted to take pictures of the Pike's sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Seattle is surprisingly kind of dead at night in the city.
Yeah.
Maybe that's changed. But the first time I visited and went to downtown at nighttime, I was like, why is everything closed?
No, we went. Yeah, we went to that Irish pub and you had texted about the beet salad that you had earlier that day. And I think that inspired Allie because she ordered this bomb beet salad. It was very good. And then I ordered some sort of brie thing with
charcuterie.
With crackers. Charcuterie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or charcuterie and a beer, I think.
And so are you guys like fully immersed? Do you have the tradition? Do you eat like cheese with jams and stuff like that? Or is that a foreign to you?
No, I do that. But that's only because I dated someone. I dated a kid that had German parents. So he had all that weird cheese. And I'm like, this is amazing. Otherwise, that wasn't super normal to have every kind of cheese like available in the fridge and just bust out different cheeses and be like, we're going to eat different cheese right now and jam and crackers and whatever. And I'm like, this, I can get used to this. And I didn't get exposed to that until college because I dated this guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like a good charcuterie board.
That's my jam, literally. And I would bring that to parties and stuff and people would be like, what is this? Why this doesn't look appetizing, but it takes a while to like win people to try it. And then generally when they try it, they like it.
Or people that drink wine.
The American cheese and crackers tradition.
Yeah. Yeah. This is European Lunchables. Okay. It's better.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good way to put it.
I like charcuterie and wine.
Yeah. I think people that drink wine tend to know tend to like charcuterie and chocolate. Am I saying that? Charcuterie.
I don't know. I think you are.
Okay.
I think you are. Yeah.
I think so.
And so my beet salad I had at Benchin headquarters in Montreal last week. They were kind enough to invite me to their demo day, and they have a really cool experience center now where they have like a bunch of their systems set up with different robots for different types of applications. And I got to play around with some of them. And All in all, I think that you guys would have some fun there too. I hope, Allie, maybe you can join
probably
me here. But yeah, that was a really cool trip, and I had about 45 minutes to myself between the end of the event and needing to head to the airport. So I got to take a walk around the canal neighborhood, around where their office was. And man, I am looking forward to visiting Montreal again. The ketchup chips were interesting. I won't say that I would choose that as a flavor going forward.
What is that?
Ketchup chips?
Ketchup flavored potato chips. It's a Canadian thing. And they really taste like ketchup, like straight up, like you were just had doused your potato chips in ketchup, but without them being soggy.
Huh. Interesting.
I'm going to go with no.
Yeah. I was like, yes.
No.
It's like what I expected it, and I...
No.
I'd try it.
I like ketchup, but I don't know if I want something with like ketchup dust on it.
Yeah. Ketchup dust.
Very interesting. The other one was a bag of Ruffles with the flavor called All Dressed Up. And it had a picture of like a bell pepper, an onion, and salt on it. And that one I really liked. I can't say that it beats the sour cream and cheddar, though. Those are like the OG Ruffles. I can't.
Yeah, yeah.
I can eat an entire bag of those. But yeah, so the folks at Vention told me that Montreal is known for having good food. And A, it has good food. And B, they know how to cater an event, I guess. Because normally you just get kind of whatever boxed lunches, their basic soggy turkey sandwich with an apple. And they did a great job having a good variety of food and also drinks that are not sweet or not alcoholic. So I'm starting to see more flavored sparkling water show up at events. Fun nice. Options to eat if you're, you know, not into drinking a Coke and whatever. And they had really nice coffee machines, the ones that grind the beans fresh. And you just literally put a milk carton in there.
That's fancy.
And it pipes into the milk carton. And so it will make you like a fresh latte or a cappuccino or whatever.
That is fancy, huh?
Fancy and very good. Yeah, you don't even need a robot like barista for that. The machine is robot enough to do it. And they've gotten a lot better from those like gas station, you've got a latte, but it's not really a latte machines. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's cool. That's really cool.
So that was my week, but I wish I had been hanging out with you guys in Seattle, I will have to say. But there's only so much time and so many places for us to be and so many things for us to do.
So yeah. When are we going to Germany?
Next year?
Yeah, let's go.
Either the next SPS or the next Hanover Mess.
Yeah, I want to go.
But
all right. Well, we'll see somebody in Germany, whether it may be you guys. But yeah, what else do we have planned going forward? I'm going to AHTD's fall meeting in Florida in a couple of weeks. That's the Association of High Tech Distributors, which is automation distributors. And then I know I invited Allie. I think we'll see whether she'll tag along with me. And then the question is Automation Fair, which is coming up in about a month from now. That we know are going. And we've been asked this question before, and I said, no, we're not going, but it looks like we might be going. Allie, what do you think?
I think we should go.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you're going to be at Automation Fair, shoot us a message and we'll try to meet up with you. We're going to be speaking most likely at it on a panel in the pulp and paper industry segment about collaboration. So that should be fun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to be really critical of the food because I'm paying $400. For 4 days of food. It does come with lunch.
That's $100 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we will be judging the food compared to the recent events that we've been to.
Because the other events are free, so...
Yeah. So let's do a wrap-up post after Automation Fair, focusing on nothing but the food. Other people talk about the automation.
The salad was exquisite.
Chef's kiss.
Back to our regular scheduled programming of Automation Ladies. Anne, would you do us the favor of telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got to be in this position that you are now, which I guess is running Anne Wyatt Recruiting, which is your own company.
Yeah.
As well as working, I don't know what you would call partnering with PCE LLC to help them with recruiting, yeah. HR, and a bunch of other stuff, right? So yeah, give us a little background and tell us how you got to be here.
Yeah, so that's a great question, Nikki. I appreciate that. I'm really passionate about manufacturing. I think I've told this story multiple times on multiple different podcasts, I'm sure, but I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky. In that role, I had to work in employment services for all industries, and manufacturing just really caught my eye because, you know, robots. And I just really love watching raw product be turned into, you know, raw material be turned into a product. I love it. So when I left the state, I started in white recruiting and wanted to only focus on manufacturing and sourcing technical talent, engineering talent, things like that. And have had just a lot of success in that. And then, you know, I got on this app with Clubhouse and did Industry 4.0 Club, which, you know, still part of that. And then I don't know. It's just been that trajectory, right? Ended up hanging out with you, lovely ladies, meeting for the first time at Automate this year. And that was fun. Yeah. That was fun. I did try to explain to Phoenix because he was like, oh, you know, do you see these dinosaur costumes? And I was like, we have one of those. And he's just like, no, we don't. And I'm like, yeah, we have one of those. And he's like, well, why do we have one of those? And I was like, because I have one. Okay. And yeah, and so I showed him that and it blew his mind a little bit, I think. So that was a good parenting win. But yeah, ended up where, so specifically like what I do with Allie, yes, I would say it's a partnership for sure. I help Allie, I'm helping her build out her team and managing her team and also some HR things that kind of come along with that, right? So Allie started out just Allie, right? And then you took on, you hired a PM, Benjamin, our PM. And then you all kind of approached me and then you hired a couple of field engineers. So you have those, Carlos and Sathara. And as we're growing, and when I came on, there were only like four people. Mm-hmm. And now there's like, how many are we up to, Allie? What's the current
count? A lot.
So
they're part-time, but yeah, there's a lot of people that are either students and they're working like remotely or part-time. And then I have interns because I run, you know, Kids PLC Kits. And so Kids PLC Kits labor is paid for by donations of PCE. So we donate the labor for now until we figure out like, you know, how we're funding KPK. But so please donate if you can.
Yes.
Because we need money.
Yes.
But I actually wanted to add that like before Anne and actually even before Benjamin, I was trying to do all of this and I hired some guys to help me and it was just such a struggle. I didn't have anyone to hold them accountable kind of for documentation like I have now where they'll just pound them and be like, hey, where's that one report? We have to turn that in. Or what happened or whatever. And so if they didn't tell me or they didn't like record stuff, I was like manually doing my own everything, even though they were the ones doing the field work. So it was just, I wasn't doing it right. And I've since figured out that I needed help.
Yeah.
And then I found Benjamin and Benjamin was like amazing. He's amazing with,
he's a good
like
PM.
Engineering contractors and just contractors in general.
Yep.
He knows how to
run the work.
How to stand. Yeah. Cause in contracting, it's really not about, cause I'm so like, and so are you. So are all of us like customer service based. Yeah. And he will always serve the customer, but he also knows he has that line where he can turn around and tell the contractors like, absolutely not. And I'm not so good at that. And so I needed that help too, where it was just like, where is the line and what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing that because you're actually making us in a bad position just because you're trying to help everyone. And that's like, you need to pick who you're helping. And so I needed some of that training, not training, but like advice, mentorship, whatever. Yeah. And so he's been really good about helping PCE with that. And then we're going as, you know, as hard as we could, but he's hyper project based. Like he does, you know, he's not HR. He's not, for lack of a better word, like a people person, a people leader.
We love you, Benjamin.
And so that's where Anne came in and was like, okay, who can actually like, you know, who can they go to and like say, I have a problem. And that problem being like, I don't know what to work on. And she works with the PM to make sure that they're working as much as possible on billable stuff. And when they don't have billable stuff, that's not Benjamin's problem anymore. And so I needed somebody else to be like, who, you know, can you lead this, make sure they have stuff to do. And so we have like maybe now 3 or 4 internal projects where we're figuring out how do we automate how we quote, how do we automate, we're building our own AutoCAD system, and maybe we'll be convinced to turn it into ePlan if I can get some good pricing from ePlan. No, I'm just kidding. But like we're building up, you know, what our database of what are the parts that we mostly use or that we're going to use when we do designs, like what, so we know the pricings of all the different softwares that we tend to put in. We can get that pricing to be like, okay, if we're trying to sell Ignition or Factory Talk or what at WinCC, what does that cost to the customers? So we need to have our own databases built and that quoting system I want to work on, the AutoCAD stuff. And everyone has their own trainer. So there was just all this extra stuff that people were doing. And yeah, so anyway, so back to Anne. Sorry.
Owie put together training kits for every single employee. I mean, and mailed it out to them. And that was really cool. But in that, so we have all of these things, right? Allie has all of these goals and objectives that she wants to accomplish with her business. And then on top of that, we have active contracts that we have to work. So again, just managing her people. And then also, coming up with some HR solutions. So as we're going forward and as we're hiring, managing the contracts of the contractors, the SOWs, I guess, managing, you know, payroll, because Owie just hired her first W-2 employee and what that looks like. We're getting benefits soon.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big win. We're doing it. I'm putting it out there. So Owie, we're doing it.
Okay.
You know, keeping up with time tracking, timekeeping, that's a huge thing. Because again, I mean, we went from having 4 employees to having, you know, almost 20 now. So keeping up with everybody's time, billing, burn rates, all that good stuff. But yeah, I just kind of help her with that. So
do you think when you started AnnWire Recruiting, did you have any ideas that you would be doing any of this other stuff? Does that fall like naturally in your wheelhouse? Or is it because you connected with Allie and you saw these needs and you're like, hey, I can fill that. I can help with that. Was it a conscious decision to move past just recruiting?
That's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of recruiters get into HR consulting, and I've done HR consulting in the past, and I still do HR consulting on a different level. Hmm. So, you know, HR is should be a big department of different miscellaneous things. You know, no. I don't guess to answer your question, but I also enjoy it. It's different. It's a challenge. I like challenges. I like different things. I like recruiting. I like doing labor market information profiles as well. So I do a lot of that. But yeah, no, but I think it's a good way to build, you know, a sustainable business. And I really like owning a business, and I really like what comes with that. So to me, when she was asking me about all these things and picking my brain about stuff, I was like, oh yeah, you know, I love doing that. I can help you with that, right? Yeah. I can give you ideas for that. So what do you think, Owie?
I think that I'm happy that you're helping me.
Yay.
I just still feel like even with all the help I have, I'm like barely treading above water. And I think that's just the way we always have to feel, right?
Even if you're growing,
maybe it'll get more comfortable, but the more people, the more pressure, and you want to like, and it becomes easier to like lose them, if that makes sense, in terms of they don't longer see themselves as like, I don't know, it's harder to get lost, I guess, in all the stuff going on. And so maybe they can feel neglected or no one's trying to, you know, develop them. And so I needed to know for my own sake that I'm like trying to do something to make sure that I don't lose them all, because there comes a time where number wise, there are too many. Yeah. And you can't be like, I just started making meetings where I'm actually meeting with them on a weekly basis, but
like
I can't have that forever. And I can't expect it to be any bigger than I already have, which is 5 or 6 hour slots throughout the week that I can like use to just develop one person. And so I think in the future, I'll probably use those slots to develop maybe the managers and try to help them develop their people, like, or something like that, because I don't got it. And so people like Anne are really helping me with that.
Well, another initiative also that we've been trying to drive too is, you know, every time that Allie gets on a meeting, because she owns the tribal knowledge in her company.
Yeah.
And again, you know, what I think what she is really saying is, hey, there's only one of me and it's getting a little taxing, like regurgitating all this information over and over and trying to make sure that my people are where they are. So one of the biggest things that, you know, initiatives that I've tried to really drive home with working with Allie too has been like when we jump on any type of Google Meet. And I did it this we did it this morning too, didn't we? And we were like, okay, is this meeting recording? So anytime I can get Allie in a meeting where I know that she is going to divulge that information, I want the record button on. And then I want that information, you know, even if just to have
transcription.
Even just to have it for like archives where we can later go back in and break it up and assemble it into different like training materials just to try to capture that tribal knowledge from her.
Yeah. That's critical. And I think many businesses overlook HR early on because it is one of those things. Yes, you can get by without it up until you get to a certain point in size. And then what do they really think of HR? Okay, now it's a necessity. It's a thing that I need because of compliance, or it's a thing that I need because, you know, I need these things managed. I think not enough businesses think about HR or the function, whatever you want to call it, of a people manager like you, Anne. Somebody that knows how to work with people, somebody that knows the rules, somebody that knows, right, has experience with all these things, to make that kind of a part of the inner workings of the company rather than just, okay, a bolt-on function once we're big enough that we need it. And I will say I spoke with the CEO of a company that I don't know how big they are. They've received at least $30 million in funding. They've been around for years. They're very impressive and very huge. And one of the things he said, hey, is like, we have all this information that over the years, we've like problems that we've solved or things that we've built.
Well, and there's just all these things that like need to happen. If you're going to have people help you, there has to be ground rules and they need to be written somewhere. And that's, eventually like it comes back when people are like, well, let's go look at the employee handbook. Well, we better have one. I don't know. I didn't know that I was going to go this path either, but I just knew I needed help and I didn't really understand what kind of help I needed. So it was cool to just, I don't know. It's all happenstance or I guess fate or whatever, where I just meet people and they're like, I can help you. And you're like, oh, how? And then you're like, oh, maybe you can help me. And yeah, now I will say everyone should have you don't have to have your own HR internal. Right. You can have what I'm doing, which is like, you know, Anne has her own company. She doesn't have, she does other things, but you can have someone that does just help you like, and meet your people, but actually be your, so they can't be just the service HR. Like you still want them to meet your people as if they worked at your company so that all of the people know that they can go to that one person who is the designated HR person. And no company is too small for that. Because, you know, you get a couple people and there's somewhere they can go to. So she's a hybrid. She's not just HR because they don't just go to her and be like, hey, I have a problem. I hate the other employees. That's not part of that. That is something she'll handle, but that's not what they go to her for. They're like, I need more work, or I don't understand my work, or I need a meeting with Allie, or I don't know what to do, or can I work from home on this day? or what is my workload? Like she's kind of doing. That's why she's not just HR. We call her like people leader.
Yeah, no, and I really like that actually, because I think the connotation of HR to me, at least when I started in my career, it was somebody that like gives you the documents when you show up for your first day. Like here's the
and never talks to you again.
And if there's a problem, you talk to HR or you have an interview twice a year with HR. And I was immediately told not to trust HR, not to tell them anything, because they're not there for you. They're there for the company. And if you tell them something that you think is confidential, it'll still get to your boss. And so just don't say anything. That was literally my first introduction to HR, the function. And since then, I've just never had any good thoughts or feelings about HR and always thought that it's just, oh, one of those things that you have to have. And I think that's why it's probably a good thing that you're calling it something else, because to most employees, you're like, oh man, I gotta go talk to HR, right? Or whatever. Whereas Anne is really a go-to person. She's there to help. She's there to help people develop. And I mean, dude, we were just talking off camera before the show about negotiation. And that's one of the things you mentioned, Allie, too, that you wish that you had. No, that was Megan earlier. But anyway, I think most of us don't learn how to negotiate anything. A lot of us aren't even aware of what's negotiable.
I'm part of that. Negotiation has not been, it's something I've had to learn. It's not part of growing up and being taught how to do that.
I feel like that's one of my most underutilized skill sets.
And you should do a virtual course for female engineers on how negotiating on their own behalf, like for job.
I could do that. You'll have to let me know if there's any good reception to that, if people would be into that kind of thing. I always overlook. That's one of the things.
If anybody's listening to this and we'd be like, I would like to take a class or get some pointers from Anne on negotiating for myself for my next position or my next raise or even your current contract, then shoot us a message or something or DM Anne. Tell her that this is a thing that you want. I know I want it. So you've got customer number one right here.
You know, I was going to say that I know another person that came on our show that actually said that she paid a coach to help her be more assertive, learn negotiation, like in her job, as part of her job. So I think there's a huge market for people that just are, they're going to wing it. Like me, like I really, my whole outlook was, I'm just going to see how good it goes if I don't, and maybe they'll like me more or whatever. And it always leads to not getting anywhere near. And that's also part of why I think, like we say, there's pay gaps and all this other stuff, but we also barely, at least on the woman's side, we don't really go out there and try that hard to be like, hey, you know, for these reasons, you should give me more money, because that's a confrontational thing. But it's actually like should be taught as something that's natural. I know you're not going to enjoy it, ladies, but this is actually okay for you to do to your boss, even if your boss is a man.
I mean, this is just what you bring to the table, and this is what your terms are.
And that's that's okay. You know, and it's not mean or like bossy or manly for you to go and ask that stuff on behalf of literally your family and yourself. Like, it's okay. No. You can do that.
There should be zero. Yeah. And I mean, I think as people, we're very emotional anyway, right? We're like very attached to our feelings or whatever. But I mean, it's business. And that just is what it is at the end of the day. I mean, now I will say, you know, I'm not one of these coaches that is going to be like, oh, you know, like swing all the way in the left field somewhere. I'm going to be realistic. I'm going to say, okay, you know, I think with Nikki, we were talking earlier, this is a really good example, because this advice that I'm offering you is not necessarily the advice that I would offer other people. But I mean, that's with your title, you know, it generally comes some expectations with that. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with
that. That's just also really good to know, because I think a lot of us, you know, we come into our careers, we find a job, we maybe move up in that job, or we get recruited somewhere else, or we meet someone through our network. We are not in the business of negotiating our time. Like, we do a job, right? That's what we are good at. And you do something every few years, let's say, maybe negotiate a new job or a salary or a promotion or something, but it's not something that we think about all the time, and most people don't. So why would we develop a lot of skills around that if our skills are product development or, you know, automation engineering? Then it doesn't necessarily make sense that, hey, we would have a lot of expertise around the contracts and what is appropriate to ask for and what's not, right? There's no reason to know that, but it is important to know that, especially as you get, you know, further up in your career, because you're going to miss out otherwise. And yeah, something that I wish that over the years I had known more about earlier, as well as just understanding that, you know, HR isn't just what I thought it was from my first interaction with them. And same thing with recruiters. I know, Anne, I don't know how much, you know, this discussion.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Garbage recruiters are all over LinkedIn and everybody's inbox all the time, right? Offering us jobs we've already had or things that
are not applicable at all.
Not applicable.
I get technician jobs.
Telling us that it's got great benefits and comp and it's like half of what I make now, or, you know, all these types of things, right? What's the difference between a good and a bad recruiter?
It's a really successful tactic too, which is great. I just have a really hard time doing it. Like, I am just not the one that's going to go blast somebody's DMs like cold just on a random. There's like aggregation tools that you can get, you know, where you can essentially just like mass you know, integrate with LinkedIn. LinkedIn doesn't like that though, but I mean, it scrapes it, which is another reason I don't use it, but scrapes them and blasts them and all this stuff. But I mean, when you do that, you're missing the detail, which should be, quite frankly, obvious details. You know, like, no, I would not be I promise you, I would not be a good fit as a loan officer. Promise you that. You know what I mean? And so then you end up with all of this like automated garbage, and you know, it gives a bad name to recruiters, or you have really super green recruiters, which there is nothing wrong with that. When I started my career, I was quite young to be in recruiting, I think, honestly. But it's because I really paid attention to detail. I'm really obsessive compulsive on things like programming languages. I'm really the same way with like machinery, industry sectors, that type of thing. I know what transferable skills, you know, because I've spent a lot of time researching that, right? So I use the pulp, paper, and metals industry example all the time. But I mean, generally, if you have someone in either of those two industries, they're pretty compatible with the technology and the machinery that they use, believe it or not. And like rolling metal. That's not like, that's not like fab. But, you know, I'm super picky about NAICS codes. I'm super picky about knowing all that. And I think when you're not, you just kind of sound so tone deaf. Yeah. You know what I mean? As a recruiter. And then, of course, I'm over here, like, I get all offended. I'm like, really? I mean, but there's a few really good recruiters in our network. So I don't want to be like, you know, whatever. There's some really good ones, but there's so many bad ones. And those good ones would say the exact same thing that I'm sitting here saying.
I bet. Because it's hard.
It's exhausting.
When you're really good at what you do and there's just drivels of people out there that don't know anything, it makes it hard to the layman or somebody that doesn't know you to differentiate yourself from that garbage. Not to make a parallel that's bad at all. Like, there's a lot of real estate agents, right? Also, I think there's like more licensed real estate agents than there are home sale.
Mm-hmm. Recruiting is like real estate.
Yes. So somebody can go get their real estate license and they know how to do the paperwork of a real estate transaction. But do they really know much about the market and anything beyond the vanilla? You know, they taught it in the class, step A, B, C, D, this is how it goes. No. And I've been in the real estate industry on and off, not as an agent, but just as a buyer, as a seller, as an investor, as all these different sides to it. And it's funny because people generally, when I meet real estate agents and they find out how much I know, they say, oh, why aren't you a real estate agent? I'm like, well, that's a good question. I have other things to do that are more important to me. But yeah, you can learn all these things too. You're just not going to learn them from the basic tests that you take. Like, you really have to go out there. And what I found is most things that I try, I go in looking at it going, oh, this is pretty easy. All you have to do is A, B, C, D. And then you go in and you do A, B, C, D, and then your eyes open and you see the world through that new lens of this industry or this role or this whatever this is. And then you go, oh crap, I really don't know anything at all. I now know the basics of something that I can go 1,000 feet deep into. And a lot of it probably is just also about your experience, right? The industries you've gotten to know, the areas, the candidates, like all of those things build as you become an experienced recruiter, right? You can rely more on your instinct. So,
oh yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And I'm spoiled. I've had some really top-notch recruiters look out for me and, you know, if you want to use the term, bring me up and invest time and invest, you know, hours of phone conversations into teaching me what's what. And then I've had some really amazing clients because I think you can get all that information, sure. But until you have the awesome client base that I've had over the years, that's like, hey, yeah, we want you to come in and walk through the facility. We want you to see the line. We want you to talk to our maintenance guy. We want you to talk to our engineering manager. We want you to talk to the plant manager. And you see the process, and then you're allowed to ask all those questions. And you know, I did. And it's like, oh, what's this do? Do you see that machine vision? You know, all that stuff. And they get excited. They're like, oh, you know, you're so passionate about it. I'm like, this is cool. But having that opportunity to like nerd out and again, fail forward, you know, in a lot of situations. And I've been super grateful for that and super lucky.
No, so I get what you mean. Because it takes, you know, that everybody's going to invite you in for that look, right? And then, but you've done an amazing job building your network, Anne. I wouldn't discount that either. Is that something that you were actively doing before you got on LinkedIn and Clubhouse, or has that been a catalyst for you as well?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So I've always tried to build.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of recruiting too. That's another part of recruiting that people I think miss. Like you have to build a network. So before I really got on LinkedIn and Clubhouse and all that, I kept a pretty tight network in South Central Kentucky. I mean, that's where my clients were. That's, you know, where I'd worked with people face to face a lot. I was really active in the SHRM chapter there, and that was very important to me. It was very important to me to keep those relationships. I think what's really cool, because at that time I had a LinkedIn network, but a lot of people really weren't on LinkedIn still. Yeah, but I mean, it was always my favorite social media platform for some reason. But I had, you know, I had probably around 1,000 connections then. And then when I started doing the Clubhouse and the LinkedIn stuff and the lives and Workforce 4.0 and all of that good stuff, it just really added even more value to my network. And I really enjoy having the conversations that I've had with people. I like to get to know people. It's important to me. So, you know, and I really try to be very authentic with the content that I put out there too.
Yeah, I was about to say that comes through, and I feel like I can tell that you really do
really care.
You're doing the show because you care and you want to connect and you want to hear those stories and you want to learn from people. I think there's a lot more of these things coming out now because companies have seen, oh, this is the next new thing, or, oh, we should have a podcast too. And I've been on some of them, and you know, you can start to tell the difference between the people that are authentically doing it because they want to, and then there's the people that are doing it because they have a goal or a KPI that they're trying to fill, and they think that this is the thing that's going to help them do that. And I don't want to put down like people doing it like that, like a corporate podcast or something that, you know, you're doing for business development. I mean, there's a lot of value in doing this type of thing. But from yours, I've always felt like it was your passion. Yeah. And like, I talked to you before you started Workforce 4.0, and I know that you were thinking about it then. Yeah. You were like, yeah, I think I'm going to do something on my own. Like, so tell us a little bit more about Workforce 4.0. Where are you with that? How has it been for you? And are we expecting to see something new from you soon on that front?
So I did a lot of episodes in July, and you know, I've moved twice this year, Nikki. Like, I'm I got divorced. I moved twice.
Okay. I'm really surprised. I'm surprised, to be honest, that you did any of it based on, you know, I know how busy you've been.
Yeah. I really want to do it. And I think that's, you know, but I've been pretty slow lately, and I've been like very tardy on getting some content out. And not only that, but engaging on other content from my friends. And I'm like, I've got to catch up. But you know, moving twice, I moved back in, when was it? When did I move? April, May, something like that. And then moved again here recently, and just unpacking and just enjoying like setting up my house the way that I want it, which for me is if you know, which I think, you know, I don't think everybody knows, but to me, that has been a big, very important to me. It's been a very big deal to me.
Yeah.
And just getting all that together. But I have episodes recorded. I've got, of course, like the rest of season one and season two to do. But again, you know, I care. I want it to be very like, I want to do my guests, you know, justice and have everything ready to go. And
so unlike us, you're going to get it buttoned up before you release it, is what you're saying.
I know, because everybody, see, like, that's the thing, though. So, like, content, you can't, like, really drag your feet like I do. With content, it shouldn't be as serious as I think sometimes. I'm just like, yeah, I know. But do you remember when so-and-so came on and they were so nice and they were so, you know, like informative and they shared so much and they brought so much to the table? You know what I mean? I don't know. You shouldn't be that way. You should just roll it.
Well, I know it can be hard. I mean, if we didn't have Laura putting the final touches on our stuff and putting it out, it would never see the daylight, to be clear. And so Allie and I did this presentation at Inductive Automation's Ignition Community Conference a couple of weeks ago. And they wanted us to talk about our experience with Automation Ladies. And it was a really interesting exercise for me because I actually went back and looked at our old LinkedIn messages. And man, LinkedIn is so hard to use. Like, it drives me crazy. But I finally got there. I pulled some stats. I pulled some old messages and some stuff. And it blew my mind, A, to like, some of the stuff we recalled was kind of wrong. I mean, our memories are not completely without fault. But two, just to think the heart, we tried so hard in the beginning. And I tried so hard to do it myself. And we got nowhere. And then it was, again, happenstance, like through the power of us trying and reaching out to people, reaching out to guests, talking to people. Allie got a referral to this girl named Laura who, you know, worked in a coffee shop. We wouldn't be here without her. And not to say that you need a producer, but I'm just saying that I completely understand how, like, if it was me saying, yes, this can go out, our show would not be out there because it is very hard to let go of that perfectionist, like you're your own worst critic. Oh, yeah. At least I know I am.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure most of the people in our tribe, in our network, are the same. I think that's also why we like LinkedIn so much, because A, we have no life. B, like our life is generally very intertwined with our work. And so what a more perfect place to, if you're going to spend any time doing something.
Yeah, we're all super career driven.
We are. And I think otherwise we would be spending all this time, I don't know, on Instagram or other places where people that care about their looks more are spending time, people that are about whatever, other things, right?
Yeah.
And I go out there in the world and I see people and they're spending so much time on these other things that are completely, to me, like not related to what I would, for me, it's like family, work, and you know, friends like that to me, all melds together also. Cause at this point in life, like I work remotely, I work for a startup. My startup family feels like a family, even though we don't officially say that cause it's not in HR terms, not appropriate to say. And then you guys, I mean, Automation Ladies and everybody around that feels to me like I'm hanging out with friends. And then I happen to have a pretty decent sized extended family that are, you know, some of them are my age and they have kids, my kids' age. So I don't need a whole world of a bunch of other stuff going on out there or a bunch of other social networks. I also just like it because LinkedIn kind of is a, and I know people, there's some like probably toxic, you know, positivity on LinkedIn. And I've certainly curated my feed and the people I've connected with or stay connected with, but it feels like an uplifting place with positive energy where people can't just be their worst selves because their employer or their customers or their, you know, somebody that matters to them financially might be.
Yeah, like they can't.
And so you get a little bit less of the
going at each other's throats, right? Which I like that. I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
No one wants to see that.
Right.
You know, we want each, you know, and again, being like genuine and authentic as I can be here when I'm saying like, we want you, and I'm speaking for you and Allie as well, but I mean, really all of us that are out there on LinkedIn in the manufacturing community, we really want to see the best version of you. We want to see the positivity. We want to see the teamwork and the collaboration. You know, I do like that about LinkedIn, because it, you know, people I think are a little bit more afraid to be tacky, we'll say in Southern terms. Can't be uncouth. Can't be uncouth.
Yeah. All right. So we're coming up against actually close to an hour already, surprisingly. So I think I'm going to wrap up with our last question, which is, Anne, tell us where we can find you. Where can we follow what you're doing? If people want to reach out to you, if they have recruiting needs. So this is a very long compound question. Where can they find you? And what should we expect to see from you in the near future if people are going to hop on the train to follow and connect with Anne White?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So that's an important question. LinkedIn, AY Recruits for all social, most social, you know, I have most major social on there, AY Recruits. But you can also email me at awyatt@annewhiterecruiting.com. It's also a good spot to get a hold of me. What you can expect, I need to get the rest of my episodes of Workforce 4.0 up, but you will see those and you'll see a continuation of that. If nothing else, again, I just like to do it. So there you go. You're going to see some more collaboration with Allie and I on some stuff that we're working on. You're going to see a little bit more about what I'm doing with some labor market information. These, I think, in some very creative ways on that, if that makes sense. And yeah.
I have very much enjoyed your content that I've seen in the past about your insights when it comes to the labor market statistics. A lot of it tied to your region, right? In Kentucky and the neighboring areas, which I think for a lot of our, we have some friends and companies that we deal with in those areas, a lot of manufacturing going on.
Oh, yeah.
So are you going to keep kind of your, is your recruiting business and your content still going to be fairly regionally specific, or are you looking at, you know, anywhere in the country?
No,
covering
I recruit nationally. I think, let's see, where has my farthest? I mean, I guess technically Allie is my farthest client away from me, right? She's in Seattle. But yeah. No, I've recruited for companies up in Wisconsin. I've recruited for companies in Tennessee, in Michigan. So yeah, new national. I'm more industry. Sure. I mean, I'm more picky about industry specific than I am probably location.
Yeah, because of, you know, roles, processes, and, you know, a pulp and paper mill or facility in, you know, whether it's somewhere in the country or somewhere else doesn't matter as much as you knowing the types of roles and the types of people that you need for that industry. That makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Anne. It was a pleasure having you on the show, finally.
Yes.
Thank you for being part of our network. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a good partner to PCE and Allie. And Allie mentioned earlier, I don't know if this will make it into the episode, but KidsPLCKids.org is the nonprofit. It is a 501c3 registered nonprofit, and she would love your donations. She's been getting a lot of donations of hardware for the trainer, which is fantastic. But there is also a need to pay some staff and to do some other things around the business that are not hardware related. So if you want to actually donate funds, that would be very much appreciated as well. And I think the best way to do that is to go to kidsplckids.org and reach out to somebody there.
Yeah,
right?
Let me do a quick riff on that, actually. So because I do work some with Allie on Kids PLC Kits as well. So this is, which we've got some great people lined up with it too, you guys, really and truly. But basically, we just had a successful workshop in August for the Clover, Clover Park Technical College there in Washington, where Courtney Pinning goes to school, right? So she led the workshop. It was super successful. And then she gets approached and she's like, you know, do you want to do more of these? So that's going to be kind of a key focus of Kids PLC Kits, in addition to sending the trainers, the actual trainers and the actual kids to teachers. And that's going to be upcoming. So you're going to see more of those in-person workshops for Kids PLC Kits.
That is very cool. Yes. So if you are at a school and you want to see these workshops near you, that's another thing that they can do. Very cool to have, you know, done the first event and it be successful enough that somebody wanted you to replicate it. That's a clear sign that you guys are doing something right.
Yeah. I was proud of her.
So kudos to her. Hopefully we can get Courtney Pendon on the show here soon as well. I'd love to hear her story. But with that, we will let you go. Allie had to run. I see her out of the frame. So thank you, everybody. If you're tuning in, we appreciate you listening to the show. We'll be back with another episode next Thursday. And if you're around at any of these events that we're going to be at, please find us, say hi. We should be wearing purple hats of some kind. They may say PCE, they may say Quote Beam, they may say Automation Ladies, but we found that's a surefire way to find us in person. So with that, thank you very much. And I appreciate you coming on, Anne. And everybody, there will be a guest profile for Anne on automationladies.io with all of the links to all of her pertinent businesses and such. And Allie just jumped in. So Allie, you want to say bye? I said we were just signing off because we've been recording for a little over an hour now, and I had told Laura I'll try to make this a short one.
Oh my God. Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.